Art allows people to take created objects and use them to tell poignant stories about the world in different, surprising, sometimes disguised ways. Art invites people to see the world around them differently, pausing to consider new ideas communicated by the manner in which paint is applied to canvas, or stone is cut, or metal pieces are welded, or encaustic is applied to fabric. For Christians, art offers a way to express our gifts and explore how our stories align with God's broader story for the world. Today, we'll dive into the world of art with studio artist Christy Nelson. We'll discuss the intersection of faith and work, and we'll get caught up on how COVID-19 is affecting the arts community in this episode of the Purposeful Work Podcast. Welcome to the Purposeful Work Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Dick. The Purposeful Work Podcast is brought to you by Pathway U, an online career assessment system that uses predictive science to help you find joy, meaning, and purpose in your career. For more information and to join, go to pathwayu.com. That's pathway, then the letter U.com. Today on the Purposeful Work Podcast, we offer our next interview in a series of interviews that focus on the intersection of faith and work, drawing themes from my new book, Redeeming Work, A Guide to Discovering God's Calling for Your Career. Our guest today is Christy Nelson. Christy earned her Master of Fine Arts in 2019 from Colorado State University and has embarked on a career as a studio artist, while also serving as events and volunteer coordinator at the Fort Collins Museum of Art. Christy is featured in Chapter 8 of Redeeming Work, and her art has been exhibited in galleries all over the US and internationally via the Warbling Collective's online exhibition. You can find images of Christy's work at christynelsonart.com. That's Christy spelled C-H-R-I-S-T-Y, nelsonart.com. Welcome to the podcast, Christy.
Thank you.
Christy, I tell a piece of your story in Chapter 8 of Redeeming Work, but I'm so excited to have you on the podcast so we can hear more about the bigger picture and get a clearer sense of the context for your work. I know some of what you create tells pieces of your story, often in veiled ways, and I know some of that is by design. But for our listeners, I'm wondering if you can start out by sharing a little bit about your personal context. Tell us where you're from and what your upbringing was like.
Well, I am the youngest of seven children. I grew up in Mississippi on a rural farm in Oktibbeha County. And there are kind of two conflicting narratives that I've identified of what it was like. Because as a child, you don't necessarily, you kind of frame your memories by what you're being told about them. And so I had this picture of it being like idyllic, farm life. You know, we were homeschooled, we had the quote unquote like right theology, and even my parents' divorce was kind of dismissed with this idea of like, oh, we put the fun in dysfunctional, and kind of painting this narrative that like it was all roses. But kind of at a different point in my life, like I identified that it was actually pretty difficult and an unsafe childhood for me, where I experienced sexual abuse. And, you know, like you said, I do want to keep some things veiled, but I think it's also important for people who have experienced this type of trauma to be vocal about it, because they're not alone. And there's 1 in 3 females and 1 in 6 males has had a similar experience. And so I just wanna be a support to anyone that is in that category. Cause yeah. I had a friend this summer that I would have never put in the same boat as me. And when I found out that she was there, it was heartbreaking, but it was also very comforting to just feel like you're not as alone. And even people that you kind of had on this pedestal of, ooh, that's like the coolest, like they can have just as hard of a story as you. So yeah. That's kind of a I don't know, diverse snapshot of childhood.
Sure. I appreciate your sharing that, and I know a big part of your story, it's a story of redemption, and there are themes in your work, your art, that explore healing and vulnerability, and we'll talk more about that shortly here, but I'm wondering from the perspective of discerning your calling, what did you see looking back as the link between your own process of healing from some of the wounds you experienced as a child with the ability you had to create and to communicate things through your work as an artist? How did you put those things together as you were coming of age and figuring out what you were going to do with your career?
It kind of came in phases where from a young age, even till I guess kind of that high school point where you're deciding what you're doing, art was the most fulfilling thing that I did. And it kind of just took me to a space. Like even when I was younger, I would just cut paper for hours. And it just kind of created this space that was separate from everything else and just felt like comforting and just fully inclusive of that moment and in the present, just kind of using your hands and making and thinking in terms of what's the next step and all that. So the act itself of making being one of the most fulfilling things that I had experienced. And then another part of it is in high school, I submitted my portfolio to Scholastics and then also in scholarship competitions at the university that I went to. And I got great feedback as well and money. So I feel like there was kind of this external component of people valuing what I was doing as well as it being fulfilling. And that was kind of at that younger developmental stage of just kind of piecing together what life looks like and how you're going to do things. But probably 10 years later, after I had graduated and was in a totally different space, and I was still making art, but I didn't know why I was making it. It just was fulfilling, and so I was making it. And I still had other jobs. I worked as a financial planner's assistant, and you know, it was fun, and I enjoyed the people I worked with. But there was someone shared the story of the cellist of Sarajevo, which is Vedran Simovic. That's not how you say it. Vedran Simovic. I don't know. Anyways, he was a cellist that was living in Sarajevo during the time of the siege, and his town was being bombed, and there were 22 people in line for bread. And they were all killed by bombshells. And he took that really hard and really painful thing to see happen to his community. And he came up with a way to honor those people that had been killed. And for the next 22 days, he put his cello out in the town square and played. And he did it as a memorial for each of those lives. And I think when I heard that story, which is true, it really connected with me about the power of art. And in that case, it was music, but even just visual art and how art can function as such a agent of hope and restoring things that have been lost, even if it doesn't necessarily change the situations, it can provide a new context or a new perspective and also just bring hope that wasn't there before. And I feel like when I kind of heard that and really resonated with it, it was really helpful in realizing that I think art can do that. And I believe that my art can do that. And so that was when it kind of turned from, I do this and I don't really know why I do this, to I do this and I feel like I have a reason for doing it.
Yeah, wow, well said. Talk about purposeful work. I mean, that's inspiring. I love that convergence of influences that you experienced. On the one hand, just the process of creating you found restorative and a way to help cope with some of the pain in your life. But you also had some clear gifts. You received a lot of positive feedback. You were able to achieve a great deal, which reinforced that, hey, you know, you have some real talent here. And then being able to connect all of that to this vision of how art can really help people memorialize and think about their community, their world in a different way, get them reflecting on things. I mean, that's beautiful.
Thanks.
So I would like to dive a little more deeply into some of the details of the work that you do. But before we get there, let's just get a snapshot of what your work is like, because you combine studio art with working at an art museum. So I'm just wondering, what does a typical work week look like for you? And how has that changed in this COVID-19 era?
Well, I actually just had an intern that we have at the museum ask me this exact same question. And the answer is, there is no typical week in this mm-hmm. in this role. Because with the events and volunteer coordinator, you do all kinds of different sides of it, which is, I think, one of the things that keeps it interesting for me. But you do everything from lining up volunteers for future events to marketing future events to being there at the events, which is definitely my favorite part, and getting the snacks, lining up the catering. Every week is something different, where we have luncheon lectures or we have house-to-house concerts where we have an artist, or it's called artist-to-artist house concerts, where we usually have a visual artist coming with a performing artist and then have like some interviews in between them, and then they also both talk about their practice, and then the performing artist usually does a house concert as well. So I don't know, it's just we have tours of kids that come through, and it's just a really energetic atmosphere. But it is very different after COVID-19.
Sure.
Because none of the events can happen. So we were preparing for one of our major fundraisers for the year is our mask exhibit, and basically it's a huge community endeavor where we have 215 artists in the area come and get a mask that's blank and ceramic, and then they take it home and they have a time period to turn it into something beautiful. And then they bring it back and we have a silent auction and we have a big party. And, you know, there's a opening exhibition and a closing exhibition, and it's just a really exciting, energetic time. And we're having to switch that to an online auction right now, and we really want to keep that energy because it still is all the beautiful masks these artists have made and they've invested so much in, and we also need things to sell for our income, so we want to keep the energy, but it's just very different because we can't gather and share that energy together. So it's also something that I'm a little bit, I personally have asthma and I'm immunocompromised. So I'm a little bit curious as to if I can effectively do my job after this, until there's a vaccine or something. Cause I don't want to be a burden and make it to where there's an events quarter that can't go to events.
Sure.
So I don't, my boss told me not to worry about it, but it is like a big unknown of how will this play out.
Yeah, the uncertainty is just very burdensome to manage, isn't it?
Yeah.
What else have you seen from the art community in Northern Colorado here? Like, in what ways are they impacted by the quarantine, the safer at home COVID-19 response?
I mean, a lot of exhibitions have been canceled. I was in one that was postponed indefinitely, although the art is still hanging, so that's fun. I was also in a residency program that was supposed to be 3 months, and they're going to extend it a month, but I still don't even know if I'll be able to go up there during the time I have the residency, which for that we provide community outreach stuff, so that community of artists being able to gather isn't happening anymore. And then, you know, I think it is a difficult time financially, and there have been a lot of resources offered, which I think is awesome. I love living in a place that really does try to support and help each other. And the city of Fort Collins on their website has a resource link. So if you are an artist in this region and you're trying to figure out how to make ends meet, there's a great list of them there. Yeah, for our particular museum, we have had, my boss has been fantastic with grant writing, and has secured our roles for a little bit longer. And hopefully the masks will then kind of keep it going. But it definitely is a different time when you can't have people coming in the doors helping pay the bills, and it's just all very up in the air, and exhibitions are trying to figure out how to go online, and that just, it's, even with these masks, I had only been working with them from pictures, and then when I finally saw the actual objects and their dimensions, I was like, this is so different, and I'm like, so I want people to be able to experience that. So it's just work that is visual in one sense translates great to the internet because it's pictures and you can look at pictures and everyone wants to see stuff instantly. But in another way, there's like the quiet viewing and the slow viewing that you can like see the surface texture and you can go to the side and all of that. That's so like the shadows and how they move with the light, all of that is just totally missing right now because you can't be with the pieces.
Yeah, your experience is in a digitized and two-dimensional, world is very different than if you're seeing it in person.
Right.
Has it influenced the way you view the work that you create to work for a museum with its mission on exhibiting artists and educating the public on art?
I don't think it's necessarily shifted. Because I think one of the things that's always been important to me about my art is how it communicates to others. That's even one of the reasons I went to graduate school, is because I knew I had things that were complicated that I wanted to learn how to transmit visually. And so I think our mission statement with the art museum is art matters and art is for everyone.
And that's been part of your own kind of personal relationship with art for a long time.
Yes.
So Christy, tell us a little bit about your work and what you are communicating with it. You're a versatile artist. You've worked with a lot of different media. How would you describe your artistic identity, I guess?
I think I would say I am someone who likes to play in my studio. So I think that has to do with the diversity of materials and all of that is I just have a lot of different resources, and it kind of turns into this space for me of like kind of that same space that I made when I was a kid and would cut paper of mm-hmm. It kind of just shuts everything else off. There's no past, there's no future. You're just in this moment with these materials. And I would definitely say I believe in material collaboration. So I feel like, I mean, not to get too crazy, but I kind of feel like the materials tell you what they want you to do with them. So if you can just sit with them and then interact, it kind of is this collaborative process with these inanimate objects that it's just really fun. And I think that to me is the magic of why I like to make with so many different things. I like doing oil paintings on panels and, you know, very traditional medium, but there's just something that's like there's room for a wiggle and play when you use stuff that is just totally out of the box.
Yeah.
And that's fun. And I, you know, this is more kind of about the process, I guess, but I think one of the things that the process communicates is just taking these salvaged items a lot of time and transforming them into other things is something that I really enjoy. So it's kind of this idea of damaged goods or things that have been thrown away or used and injured in some way where they don't work anymore. I guess an example would be like mattress cover where the zipper's broken, or a blanket that has some like rat nibbles on the, like it's like a wool blanket and it has some rat nibbles out of it, and then like the satin across the top is kind of eaten off. Things like that where it's like this, you see the disuse and you see the disrepair, but then taking those objects and through that creative collaboration with them, just transforming them into something that has a fresh energy and a new kind of communication where it's not meant to be a blanket anymore. Now it's meant to be seen as a piece of art on a wall that you can interact with on a mental and visual level.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, because if you go to your website, christynelsonart.com, there's images from your work, and one of them introduces a series called Reclamation, and I know you work with these kinds of discarded fabrics, and then you do some treatment with a substance called encaustic. Tell us a little bit about what all is involved in that.
So a good place to start is what encaustic is. And it is a wax medium that is, it's a 1-to-8 ratio. And the 1 is resin and the 8 is beeswax. So the resin kind of gives it its permanence and glue, and the beeswax gives it its luster and kind of its it's really tactile. It's hard to explain without seeing it.
Yeah, there's a kind of sheen. I mean, it gives it a kind of a glow like a under the lights. Yeah.
But anyway, so that's the material. And then how I use that is I'll take different like old quilts or old, you know, clothing or just things like that, take them apart, reconfigure them, add in some zippers. And then, and there's something about the slowness of stitching that I really resonate with. I don't know, it just feels like this very intentional act of healing. Like even when you give someone stitches, which I would never do because I don't do well with queasy things, but it's just like this really intentional healing process or restorative process of taking something and then spending the time investment in it. And then I heat up my wax because you need it to be liquid. And then I'll dip the object in the wax. And it almost has like a baptismal quality of it where you kind of like put it down and it's one thing and then you pull it up and it's a new thing.
Wow. Yeah. One of the things that has always struck me about your work and hearing you describe it, Christy, is that, you know, there is an old object turned new that we can all observe when it's on display. But I love hearing you talk about these elements of the process of creating it. Because it's not just the end product that really matters. It's how that this discarded object is transformed into something new. And all of the symbolism that kind of underlies that process as you describe it, that I think is really kind of powerful.
Thank you.
How does that, you know, the term reclamation and this whole phenomenon of taking these discarded things and working them through this process where they come out on the other side, being still kind of the same thing, but renewed and transformed. How does that connect to healing and vulnerability as a theme in your work?
I mean, to me, it connects pretty one-to-one, which is why I think it speaks to me a lot when I do it, because it is, you know, kind of being able to be honest about sin and its impacts and the fact that we're broken. And, you know, even depending on, you know, your thoughts on sin or I don't know, that type of thing, it's especially pronounced when it's harm that's been done to you. Yeah. So there's definitely this, maybe the object was discarded after being used, and there's kind of this, I don't know, it holds that feeling of having been mistreated really well for me. But then it also kind of has the other side of just sin in general and like damage and the wounded world and all of that, to where it kind of holds the specific and the general aspects of that for me. And it works to, I don't know, like it's empowering to kind of feel that freezing the object in that moment of being made new into something different.
Yeah. There are other ways that you've played with this theme in your work. And, you know, I love to tell the story of that series you created where you invented an alphabet by kind of translating letters of the alphabet into different stages of metamorphosis, the process through which a caterpillar turns into a butterfly. And then you created that alphabet and then used it to write poems that kind of share in code different aspects of the process of coping with painful experiences. And so that theme of redemption and renewal is just really evident in the work that you do. And I know that reflects that you're a person of faith. So how would you say your art reflects your faith perspective?
Well, I think particularly with that butterfly font example, I think it's interesting how, I mean, it's definitely spelled out in the Bible, but also you can just see it around you about how everything is proclaiming God's goodness. And I don't know, even like the simple example of a butterfly and how it kind of starts as a lowly worm and then it goes into this tomb cocoon and then it like rises out of that into this beautiful creature, you know, like it just, to me, it's telling the gospel story in this beautiful little creature. And like in Luke 19, when it talks about, you know, if I wasn't talking, the rocks, or if the disciples weren't praising me, then the rocks would be praising me. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like the seasons, like all of it is just this grand retelling of redemption. And I think that's what I see my work doing too, is just repeating that story.
Yeah, I love your reference to that specific passage, because that's definitely evident in your work. And within the Christian worldview, we talk often about kind of the four-act story of Scripture: creation, fall, redemption, and renewal. And so much of your work just embodies those four acts. It's like aligning your work as an artist with God's larger story for the whole world. I mean, here you take these created objects, you know, many of which have been tainted somehow, through age, through misuse, through the passage of time, and you breathe new life into it, just completely transform it into a new thing. And it's still the old thing, but it's this kind of new and glorious version of that, and that is a gospel story.
Yeah.
What advice do you have right now for artists who are thinking about how their work connects with what's most important to them in life? I mean, you do that so well as a Christian, kind of sharing your worldview through what you create. As other artists kind of think through those issues, what can you share with them?
Well, I had the pleasure of going to a Sonia Clark artist lecture, and she's an amazing fibers artist that you should all go look up her work. But she talked about having an authentic obsession. And I think that's something that really resonated with me about just, you know what really is at the core, or if you don't, you should find out what is at the core of why you're making what you're making. Mm-hmm. And then that will inform a lot of the decisions and a lot of the formal elements of the making process for you in particular. So like each different art, like for Sonia, it has a lot to do with racial inequity. And it's so powerful how it continually comes through her work. And she uses a lot of different materials. She's used brick, she's used fiber, she's, you know, like it's this way that when you understand what is at the root of your heart, of what are the wounds you're healing from, it can really inform your work in a way that's super healing. And I don't think that everyone's work necessarily has to be that way. I think for some people, it's just a fun activity and it doesn't have deep strings attached to it. And I think that's beautiful. And I, you know, fully support that. But I think for a lot of people, there is a healing power in art. And actually, I know it's factually true, because when you paint, you're accessing your limbic system in a way that you can't, or even any creative process, not just painting, but you can't always access it verbally. So it's a way to get emotions out there that you didn't necessarily know were in there. So yeah. I don't know. I think it's a wonderful gift to have art in a way. And I hope that it can help people kind of deal with things that matter to them.
Absolutely. You know, the theme of this podcast, purposeful work, I mean, there's all kinds of evidence that suggests that when people are able to connect what they're doing, you know, through their work with what matters most to them, then there is this kind of really powerful sense of meaning and purpose that accompanies that. And You know, Christy, you are someone within the arts world that I really admire for embodying that. And I think I'm just, you know, really grateful for your willingness to share that with our listeners. So thank you very, very much for joining us on this podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. That was Christy Nelson. You can learn more about her work at ChristyNelsonArt.com. That's C-H-R-I-S-T-Y and then Nelson, N-E-L-S-O-N, art.com. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to this episode of the Purposeful Work Podcast. For more information about my new book, Redeeming Work, go to redeemingworkbook.com or search Redeeming Work at Google Books, Goodreads, or Amazon. Go to the publisher's website at templetonpress.com. Please review it at any of those sites. The Purposeful Work Podcast is brought to you by Pathway U. Izzy Park is producer of the podcast. To learn more about Pathway U, go to pathwayu.com. And as a thank you for listening to this episode, Pathway U is offering a 20% off coupon code. When you check out, simply enter the code PURPOSEPOD. I'm your host, Brian Dick. We'll see you next time.